ask not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your
country. The pundits like to slice and dice our country into red states and blue states.
That the only thing we have to fear is fear itself.
Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this wall.
Welcome to the podcast, History, Politics, and Beer, the 2020 Election Edition. We are here to take you from election to inauguration, examining the issues through the lens of history. Now, here are your hosts, Matt Shockey and Jeff Hudson.
All right. Hey there, boys and girls. Welcome back to another edition of History, Politics, and Beer. We are sitting post-election. We are recording this on Wednesday, November 11th, right around 6:30 p.m. in case any big news comes out that may invalidate or anything we say, just so you know the time and date. Hey, History, Politics, and Beer, I give the intro. Hudson brings the beer. Hudson, what do we got today? We got, it almost looks like a little variety pack from when I was a kid, and I used to get those cereals in the little variety packs.
Okay, little boxes.
God, I love those little cereals.
Yeah, they just sell four of these in these four, you know, four packs. And they charge the same as a six pack. So it's a way for them to make money. But this is Fathead Brewery's Spooky Tooth Imperial Pumpkin Ale. Now, they make pumpkin ale around this time. I don't know if you've had some before.
I've never had a pumpkin ale.
Well, I have mixed feelings about it. Sometimes
it's 9% alcohol.
This is.
That's a kick.
Yeah, it's Imperial Pumpkin Ale. But sometimes I feel pumpkin ale is, what, do you know about Barbara Streisand and her dogs?
No, I'm happy to say I don't.
Well, she clones her dogs.
Really?
Yeah, she's cloned two of them, Miss Violet and Miss Scarlet. And it costs about $50,000 a
piece. Sounds reasonable.
So, yeah. So, and I kind of look at, you know, pumpkin ale a little bit like cloning dogs. I mean, you can make ale out of pumpkins, but should you do it? So, let's have it and see what it tastes like.
Never had pumpkin ale. Well, smell it first. I'm done.
I don't smell any pumpkin.
No, either do I. Like,
I smell the 9% alcohol.
Yeah, here we go. I taste the pumpkin.
I taste the pumpkin too.
Yeah. I'm going to be able to drink it tonight. That is not.
I can taste cloves, too.
I can taste cloves, too. Actually, I can taste the cloves more than I can taste the pumpkin.
Yeah, I don't like that.
I'm going to give it a C.
Yeah, I think making ale out of pumpkin is very similar to the dog cloning
thing. I agree. That's a great analogy there. I guess there's a reason why I never had pumpkin ale before, because I was pretty sure I wouldn't like pumpkin ale. So
now you have proof.
I'm still going to drink it. Yeah. I mean, waste not, want not, right? All right, so we have a great title for this pod. It's What Happened and Where Are We Headed? And we are going to answer all your election questions. We know the future. We're going to look into the crystal ball and tell you what's going to happen next. And we're going to look back on this pod in a month and find out that we were 100% correct. So I'm going to give the floor to you right now, Hud, and let you pick the path. I have a couple cards here. I think we can go in a couple different directions. But let's back up a little bit and start from the beginning. So I'm going to give you the mic to direct us from here.
Okay, well, let's start off. This is Veterans Day. We're doing this on Veterans Day. It's they call that Remembrance Day in Great Britain.
Originally Armistice Day here in America.
You know, the World War I ended, 11th hour, 11th day, 11th month. And so in England, they wear poppies because that's the flower where the
Flanders Fields, right?
Flanders Fields. In Flanders Fields, the poppies blow between the crosses, row on row. Famous poem in Flanders Fields. And it was, I watch a lot of Premier League soccer. It's kind of neat to see them. They kneel and to observe. They call, I think, Just Say No to Racism, but it's a black line. And then they have a really nice minute or two of silence this time. And anyhow, yeah, so you have the patriotic thing and the black life. And they seem to be able to blend those without any problem. I'm not sure why we can't do that. But, you know, as you know, my dad was a veteran, and we'd like to say our thanks to all who have served. And one thing about, you know, when my dad became an officer, he took this oath. I do solemnly swear that I will support and defend the Constitution of the United States against all enemies, foreign and domestic. That's the beginning part. But it's interesting that American officials, and this is true in civilian posts as well, they don't ever pledge their allegiance to a particular party, a particular person. It is to the Constitution of the United States. And I think that's an important thing to keep in mind as we go along. All right. Now, what happened? How did our predictions go?
Well, I would say that if we're just look, if we at the lowest bar possible to claim success is, did was the prediction that Biden would win? Yes. Did he win? Yes. So that's the lowest bar right. that we could have. And we both cleared that bar easily.
Right. And Biden got, right, as of the last time I checked, and he'll get a few more. He had 77,383,000 votes to Trump's 72,274. So he beat Trump right now. He's beating Trump by more than 5 million. That might get, you know, they're still counting in California. So that might get to be 6 million votes. So as far as a popular vote, it was a clean, you know, clear victory. But the polls were, you know, they were off in some of these battleground states.
To put Trump's number into perspective, though, I checked this morning, he had 50.7% of the popular vote. And that's probably going to go up to maybe 51%.
Biden,
the popular vote. To give you an idea on that, when Jimmy Carter got crushed by Ronald Reagan in 1980, Reagan got 50.7% of the vote. So Biden right now is going to beat Reagan's vote count from 1980. So this is a substantial, now the margin isn't as much because Jimmy Carter only got 41% of the vote in 1980. Right. So the margin isn't nearly as much, but the number is very high. To get 51% of the vote isn't ordinary. That's a very extraordinary thing get 51%.
Isn't it true that this is the first time since FDR took out Hoover in the 32 election that the challenger got more than 50% of the popular vote?
No, Reagan did it.
What was Reagan's?
Reagan got 50.7 in 1980. Okay. So the real... Bill Clinton was a challenger. He got 43%.
So really what we're putting Biden in is FDR Reagan ballpark as far as his win goes.
As high as the numbers go. Now, Franklin got 57% of the vote over Hoover. But I think a good comparison for most of our listeners who have a little age behind them would be to think of Ronald Reagan. Now, again, the victory isn't as decisive because the margin isn't as much, but that's how many people were voting for Joe Biden.
So we were right about that, but I was wrong about North Carolina. I mentioned that it was kind of wishful thinking. What I was hoping is that North Carolina would come in early and it would be a Biden win. I figured Biden would win. And it would put an end to what we're actually experiencing now, which is these challenges and, you know, this allegations of cheating. Now, what's close? Trump got 50% in North Carolina, right? And right. Biden got 48.6%. Very close. And I mentioned, Buncombe County and Asheville. And Biden got almost 60% or over 96,000 votes there. But he didn't get enough in the rest of the state. And there weren't enough hippies in Asheville to pull him through. So I got a little mea culpa about North Carolina.
And I thought Florida was going to go towards Biden. I really overestimated his popularity among the Hispanic vote in Florida, especially the Cuban vote, who that idea of socialism, them coming from the island of Cuba and being really understanding what communism, real socialism is about and real communism.
And having that, and now it's handed down in generations because we don't have people coming from Cuba anymore.
Right. So I was wrong there. I had North Carolina wrong as well. I'm not sure about the polls. I think my take on the polls is that, and myself included here, and even though we talked about it last week about margin of error, we put too much stock in the polls. And I think part of that was I went back and did some reading, and I think you and I both read the website 538, and for a couple years, the polls were nailing it. I mean, there was two elections back to back where the polls hit the national election right on the head.
I think Silver, what was that, 2012? Did that site, 538, I think they got 50 out of 50 states.
Right. So I think that that's a little unfair that we are judging these sites by past performance. And if you get on 538, what you're going to see is that the polling isn't worse than it was 20, 30, 40 years ago when in the heyday of Gallup, they were looking at the margins there. And really, we're better than Gallup was when in the heyday of Gallup, but we're about the same, it appears, we were 10, 15 years ago. It's a moving target. I think of it, it's like trying to get the vaccine for the flu every year. You know, you have to try to guess what the vaccine, you know, what the virus is going to look like, and then try to, so.
You're comparing American voters to the virus.
Absolutely. I think that's a really good comparison. And sometimes we dial it in really well, and sometimes the pollsters don't dial it in very well. You know, in some states, if we look at some of the states, they nailed a lot of them. But in Maine, second district, they were off by 11. In Wisconsin, they were off by 7. In Iowa, off by 7. Florida, off by 6. Now, in Pennsylvania, they were only off by 3. That's not too bad.
No, and 3 is probably, we talked about the margin of error.
Right.
And so that's probably well within a margin of error, most of those polls.
North Carolina was only off by 3.
Right. And again, margin of error. So
right.
We can't, you know, if there's like that margin of error, we can't, as we explained, you can't really say, well, the polls are way off. They say there's going to be a margin of error like that. But when they do start to get, and you know, they did miss the vote. They undercount, I think, the participation of white working class people who supported Trump. And they came out, unlike 2018, they came out and voted because Trump was on the ticket. And so you have the Democrats who were hopeful of taking a majority in the Senate. It doesn't look like they will, although there will be a runoff in Georgia where you can get to 50-50 and Kamala Harris will be able to cast the tie-breaking vote. And you had, unexpectedly, you had in at least 10 pickups by the
right.
Republicans in the House of Representatives. And that's probably due to the fact that more Republicans came out because Trump was on the ticket. He was just more popular than the polling indicated. And I think now there was a blue shift that went on, as was expected. When these votes came in, most people knew that more Democrats voted by mail, certainly in our state, Pennsylvania, than Republicans. They were day of voters.
Right.
And so as election night, you know, Trump was ahead in Pennsylvania. But then the expected blue shift happened as these ballots came in. Then Biden eventually got closer and closer and he took the lead. It wasn't just in Philadelphia. He had, you know,
all over the state, he was doing better than
he was
expected.
And he was doing better than Hillary did. I mean, and that's one thing I think that we should point out here, because I think we're going to get into what happens now fairly soon. It's that would anybody, you know, I mean, you were born in Pennsylvania. I've lived here for 33 years now. Would anybody in Pennsylvania think Joe Biden's not going to do better than Hillary Clinton? I mean, you'd have to be, you know,
yeah.
Almost everybody would assume that guy,
Keith Scranton. He's born in Pennsylvania.
Yeah, and let's face it, he's a male, and that has something to do
right.
because this is an older state. It's a little more conservative socially than you might expect. And so all over the state, he got more votes. And not just in Philadelphia was going to put him over. But because of the big margins for Democrats.
Well, I want to stop with Pennsylvania for a second. I think the media didn't do its job with Pennsylvania on the night of the election. The next day, I started doing some math on the election results. And Trump was up by something like 600,000 to 700,000 votes. But if you added up all the votes cast already in Pennsylvania, they stood at 5.3 million votes cast. Well, in 2016, Pennsylvania cast 5.9 million votes. So even by the lowest standard, there was still 600,000 to 700,000 votes left uncounted. And then everybody knew that the roof was going to blow off with the number of,
right,
of the records.
So, as it did nationwide.
Right. So I think, and I didn't hear that reported anywhere on the media that night, that say, look, you got to look at these numbers. This number is well below what we're expecting to come in from Pennsylvania. So I think the media should have done a better job of informing people about this blue shift that may have happened. I mean, they could have predicted it or at least warned people that this could change dramatically.
Right.
And they didn't. At least I didn't hear them saying that.
I think it was. I think certain people did. But I think that it should have just been expected from the get-go. And I do think that there were sites that would inform you that you should expect that. I mean, you know, and some of the liberal sites out there are saying, well, in these states. But again, the other thing is people, you know, when things change, when somebody's ahead and then they get behind, then some people, oh, well, is that fraud? In this case, there's no evidence of fraud. These are just mail-in votes. And the Republicans themselves, and it made the rules for this election. And they can't start counting till the beginning of election day. I mean, they could have counted some of these mail-in ballots.
And there was a push, by the way, to have them be able to open the ballots early and at least prepare them to count so that we wouldn't have to sit through days of this stuff.
The Republicans didn't want that.
Right.
And I think they wanted, well, I don't know what they wanted, but, you know, because it was their rules, and I think their rules in Wisconsin as well, they control the legislature. You know, that's the way it was going to be. There was going to be a blue shift. And also, it should not surprise anybody. Oh, Philly, you know, and Trump made a couple statements about bad things happen in Philly. Well, bad things might happen in Philly. But guess what? If you have outstanding ballots in any state, and it's going to come from a big city, those are going to favor the Democrat. I mean, it's not like Pennsylvania is different than Texas.
Right.
I mean, if you had a bunch of outstanding ballots in Texas from Houston, you could probably figure they're going to favor Joe Biden. So, and that's what happened here. It's no big mystery.
And I do think that we are the sucking all the oxygen out of the room is the Biden-Trump race. But I think, and you alluded to this earlier, the Republicans greatly overperformed, or the Democrats greatly underperformed. They had a 75% chance, according to 538, to take control of the Senate. Now they're a long shot to do that, 50-50 at best.
Right.
They were supposed to pick up seats in the House of Representatives. They didn't. They lost seats in the House of Representatives.
Probably at least 10.
Right. There is I'm not going to call it a surge, but certainly a good number of Republican women now being elected. I think there was 8 or 9 Republican women being elected. So there is a lot here that the Republicans did really well in the middle of a pandemic and an economic, I'm going to call it a recession, even though I don't think we've ever officially used that term yet. Everything indicated that this should be a blue wave, and it wasn't a blue wave. The Republicans performed very well today. I think that's overlooked because of Biden-Trump.
Well, very well, but an incumbent losing the presidency, which has happened, I think this is the third time in the last 100 years.
Yeah, and
I mean, that's bad.
Right.
I mean, but Trump had popularity and he bought people out. And I imagine there was some, you know, there was some ticket splitting too, that people were voting for Biden and then voting for the Republican senator or congressional candidate afterwards. Well,
you want to push this to some of the lawsuits that are going down?
Well, let's talk about what happens now.
Okay.
Let me outline the Electoral College. Now, what happens after a general election is the governor prepares a certificate of ascertainment, and they list all the names of the individuals that are the electors, and then they have the vote count. And they also list the electors and the vote count for the person who does not win.
I have a question for you, because I could not find this. I actually found two different answers online.
Okay.
How does PA select their electors? Do you know? I'll tell you the two things I found.
Yeah.
I found A, the governor appoints them, and I found B, that they're actually appointed by the president-elect, so Trump or Biden at the convention would appoint their electors from this state.
Oh, wow. And you know what? I didn't look that up. So we got a little mystery about how they get here. Sometimes, and the thing is, in a little over 60% of states now, electors are bound by the popular vote.
Bound, but nothing really happens if you
right. And we still have these people called faithless electors. And
we can get into that because that is a problem. But go ahead, I've interrupted you before, and you were explaining the process.
We have this the state certificate of ascertainment is sent to the National Archives, and it becomes part of the official records of the presidential election. And then the meeting of the electors takes place on the first Monday after the second Wednesday in December. That'll be the 14th, okay? But there is a safe harbor deadline that they encourage by federal law the states to have their electors meet and vote by December 8th to 2020. It's called the safe harbor deadline because they want this settled. So really, that's less than a month away.
So November 23rd, by November 23rd, we must certify the election, right?
Right.
And then we're going to appoint our electors. Those electors will vote.
And hopefully by December 8th with the safe harbor.
And then those will be taken to D.C.
Right.
And then January 6th is the magic date in which they'll be counted.
Your state's certificate of vote is sent to Congress and where the votes are opened and counted. But really what we're talking about is just a few weeks until this certificate of ascertainment has to be. States have different deadlines for this, but just a couple weeks here in Pennsylvania, 3 weeks. And then less than a month before the electors actually should vote. So it's not that much time for Trump to bring these lawsuits. I forget. How many has he bought so far? I'm having trouble keeping up. Was it 7? Is he 0 for 7?
I thought he was 0 for 12 right now.
Okay. Well, it keeps going up because, we talked about the Help America Vote Act last time, which was passed in regards to what happened in Florida. And guess what? It helped America vote.
Right.
These machines. And I think it just made people more aware. Not only, I mean, you used an optical scanner. Right. That ballot was very short in PA. It got fed right in. And I saw the ballots that could be sent in. Again, very short, very easy to fill out. They invested in the machines to count them properly. So the idea that we're going to have something like Florida is silly. That's not what happened. You didn't have a bunch of counties in these states using different machines
right.
to count the vote. And you didn't have a different ballot design. You didn't have a butterfly ballot like you had in Palm Beach County, which was confusing to the older people there who had to punch out a line that was right next to another line of the opposite party. We just didn't have that. And so I know of no credible... I know the New York Times checked and had a little story today. They reached out to the heads of the elections in all 50 states and asked, have you seen any evidence of fraud? And the answer in all 50 states was, we have seen no evidence of any kind of fraud that would have affected the outcome of the election.
Now, you're right. The Heritage Foundation says 6 out of every 10 million votes results in a criminal conviction. Trump, this is from the Washington...
The Heritage Foundation is a conservative think tank.
Yes, it is. And from the New York Times, in Trump's lawsuit in Pennsylvania, to support his case, Donald Trump cited 3 cases of voter fraud in Pennsylvania since 1999 to show how rampant voter fraud was here in Pennsylvania. Now, I want to talk...
Are we like the fifth or sixth most populous state?
Yeah.
How many cases?
There's 3 since 1999.
Okay. So 3 in 21 years?
Right. So this whole issue, though, I think there's 2 things going on here. We can talk about voter fraud, which... If you want to believe in voter fraud, that's great. You can borrow my binoculars and go out and look for Bigfoot this weekend because you're looking for something that doesn't exist.
On a large scale.
Absolutely. Systemic voter fraud that would swing elections. But I think that I do think there's a sub story going on here, and that is parts of the system are broken that we do need to fix because votes don't matter until they matter. Give you an example. Pennsylvania decided to give a 3-day extension to the ballots, right? Now, this is a case...
They could come in 3 days after the elections.
Right, as long as they're postmarked. The Attorney General decided that was a reasonable thing to do.
It was taken to the Supreme Court, right?
State Supreme Court said 4-3 that was right. That case is being challenged, and the Republicans probably have a pretty good case there of all the cases they have going, because it needs to be the legislative branch of government that is going to change voting law.
Now, and they think, is there 10,000 votes or something
like that? It's not that would.
I mean, it looks like Trump's going to lose PA by the better part of 100,000 votes.
Right.
So this isn't going to affect the outcome.
It's not going to affect the outcome. But if this were Florida in 2000. It would affect the outcome. Like, those things need to be straightened out. Curing ballots, right? Can you cure a ballot? Curing a ballot means you sent your ballot in and mail in, and there's something wrong with it, some technical thing, you didn't sign something. Well, can they call you and say, hey, get your butt in here, take care of this? So you're about, well, Pennsylvania voting said, yeah, you can do that. And they told all the counties.
We're not talking about curing like we would beef jerky. We're
right.
talking about curing like first aid for your ballot.
Right.
All right.
And so, but different counties did it, and some counties did it and some counties didn't. Well, that's not fair. All counties have to do it. You know, you can't have some counties curing ballots and other counties not, because right. you're disenfranchising people. Now, again, the numbers we're looking at aren't large, but they don't matter until they matter. Even the problem with faithless electors, right? So the Electoral College, we have 20 electoral votes. What's holding those 20 people to vote the way they should? The answer is not a whole heck of a lot.
Well, they tend to be party activists. And like I said, in about a little over 60% of the states, they're bound by law. But we don't know if those laws are constitutional.
Well, the laws are constitutional. The Supreme Court did decide that.
Okay, so in 60-some percent of states, including District of Columbia, they got to vote the way the popular vote.
But if they don't vote the way the popular vote, sometimes the penalty isn't very big. Like, so those, like, for example, in 2010, 2016, do you know that 10 electors were faithless?
I knew some were.
10.
Where is
so,
it 10?
So Hillary lost 8. Trump lost 2, I think, right? And they voted for other people. They weren't switching back and forth. They voted for other people. Now, it didn't make any difference, but it doesn't make a difference until it makes a difference. Could you imagine some faithless elector changing a vote on a whim on somebody that has 270 electoral votes?
Well, you know, in Florida, when Bush finally won that, the election was 271.
Right.
It was two. So if somebody had switched... you could have had a 269 and a tie and ended up in the House of Representatives.
So the Electoral College, over its history, has cast, based, who would know this, 23,507 electoral votes have been cast.
Okay.
Of all of those, 90 have gone rogue. All right,
so not many.
and actually 63 in the same election, all right, in 1872, which I didn't know. But still... The fact is that minefield is even a possibility. The possibility exists in America that two people can change their vote and completely change the will of millions of people should not even be an option.
Well, it gets back to an argument about the electoral.
Well, this is my point here. I think that now certainly this is not the philosophical argument that Trump is having right now or his lawyers, but... When this all gets passed, and if we have a chance actually to really sit down and talk about voting, some of these things have to be dealt with, because it's like asteroids going by us, right? They're missing us, but they don't have to miss us. Could you imagine what would be happening right now if we had Florida situation right now in Pennsylvania? It would be an absolute mess. And part of it would be our own fault for not having...
We corrected some things with the help of America, but we didn't correct... Everything.
Right.
And some of it is you know, inherent in this very odd way. You know, the framers spent more time on electing a president on that system than any other single thing, which to me, again, shows that although I think they were extremely wise people about human nature, they were fallible. They wouldn't have come up with this system, in my opinion. Not the way it
Hey, smart people came up with the ETSL. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, smart people do do dumb things. Yeah. And in the context, Electoral College made complete sense. In the 21st century, I feel like we're taping together a horse and buggy and going, she's still good. She go another 4 years. You know what I mean? Like, get rid of and buy a car, man. Look what other countries are doing. So I do think there's a bigger discussion to be had at a later date,
right,
we'll about
talk
voting.
About that. Let's talk about the tradition of peaceful transition again, because we talked about that. And again, you know, that's been a hallmark of American democracy.
Since John Adams, baby.
Yep, John Adams, he lost in 1801 to Jefferson. And by the way, they hated each other's guts. And that was a vicious election. An election where the so-called partisan press at the time accused Jefferson of having relationships with a young black woman, which he was having, but that was considered scandalous. But anyhow, I mean, it was this nasty, nasty thing. And people that, you know, Washington, he was going to be president as long as he ran. Nobody's going to run against George Washington. That just wasn't going to happen. So when he left after 2 terms, and by the way, that started that tradition, was never law until after FDR got elected 4 times and they passed, was that the 22nd Amendment?
Yep.
I think. But anyhow, you know, Adams started it, and we don't have the coup d'etat in America. People get beat, and then they leave. And it's a wonderful, you don't know how great that is, because we've enjoyed it so long. But you and I have both seen, you know, the newsreels and of what happens when they don't have those traditions, and it's horrible. And Trump is supported by many Republicans in contesting the election results, even though in these, like these lawsuits show, there's very little evidence of any kind of actual voter fraud.
Right. So I tend to think that this really isn't about this election, Jeff. And I look at a couple things that are happening.
So you think January 20th, Biden's going to get
absolutely. I think the chances of Trump being president are less than 1%, way less than 1%. I don't think it's about this election. And I come to that conclusion by this. If this were really about the election, you wouldn't be arguing this in the court of public opinion, because it wouldn't matter. Rudy Giuliani and everybody wouldn't have to get on a microphone every single day to tell the American people that there was voter fraud. You would be going to the courts and simply handling it within the court system. And then you would be having a rational press conference about what was going on. But they aren't. Matter of fact, I was listening to an interview with...
throwing a bunch of stuff against the wall.
I was listening to an interview with, I think, the Attorney General of Nevada. And his office was getting slammed with, like, why aren't you doing anything? Why aren't you doing anything? And he said, well, no one's filed a complaint with me yet. You know what I mean? So the Trump campaign even hasn't filed a complaint with me, even for me to start investigating our voting systems. So I'm not doing anything until someone asks me to do something. So,
and they would have filed if they thought something was wrong.
Absolutely. So I think the fact that they are doing this in the court of public. So then it brings me to, then why is it happening? And I'm going to give you two of my hypotheses.
I got some too.
And I think there's two of them. I think they're different. I think for the Republican Party in general, I think they want to use this as a Trojan horse for voter ID. I think this is not the Republican Party has pushed for voter ID for years and years and years. So I think this is for them to get enough. It doesn't. 30% of Republicans thought the election was going to be okay. After the election, 70%. I mean, 30%. Only 30% thought there was going to be fraud. After the election, now 70% believe there's fraud. They have public opinion now swinging to think that there could be fraud. So just in case there was,
even though the vast majority of people believe Biden was elected president.
So, and I think that's going to be something that Democrats might be willing to compromise on, to kind of shake hands, kiss, and make up. So I think that's what the Republican Party. I think that's the long game there.
Okay.
Now for Trump, I don't think that's it. For Trump, I think it's to make himself the victim and to make himself the underdog again. That's the role he relishes. That's the role he likes.
Well, he's not a loser, too. There's fraud. He's not a loser.
Right.
So we all know he hates to be a loser.
So at this point, he can leave and then come back in 4 years as the underdog once again. The system was against me. I'm running against the wind. I'm this strong leader leading this army up.
I mean, he tried to run against the system being a president. That's kind of hard to do.
It is.
Because people go like, why didn't you do more about COVID?
Right. So that's those are my two theories on what Trump President yeah. Trump and what the Republican Party, because I don't really think this is about this election.
You think they know in their hearts someplace.
Oh, absolutely.
Well, we know that denial is the first stage of the grieving process too. And then, you know, so I think there's a little bit of that. I think, you know, one interesting thing is what's happening down in Georgia. Because there's going to be a runoff election.
Right.
Now, nobody got the majority, the races down there. So we got two Democrats running against two Republicans. And whoever, I mean, that has huge implications for how the country's going to be governed. And Trump asked, I didn't know this, but I've since researched, Trump asked the two candidates for the Senate in Georgia to... call for the removal of the Secretary of State, the person who's in charge of elections in Georgia. And all that seems very weird to me because it's a state controlled by Republicans. Governor Kemp is a Republican. The Secretary of State is a Republican. The elections were run by
Republicans.
And so there's sort of this, you know, it's almost a cannibalism going on. And I don't know exactly, is that... I don't know. Is that Trump not being able to accept that he lost? It looks like he lost the election in Georgia. Is that some kind of strategy to get these two people elected? Because I think if the Republican, not that Trump has a lot of power, and I think that's why those senators are going along with it, the two senators, Perdue and Loeffler, I think they are. So they want Trump to come down there. At the same time, does that alienate 5% of the Republicans, 10%? Because you're going after one of their own.
Right.
So I don't know what's happening in Georgia.
Well,
isn't that a strange situation?
It is. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
This isn't a winning scenario. You have a president who lost a popular vote twice, who was underwater in the polls the whole time. Those seem to be semi-accurate, that he was underwater in the polls. And he's going to lose. Biden's going to pick up 306 electoral votes. I don't know if in 4 years, when he's going to then only be a one-term president, how attractive that is going to be as opposed. Now, we could make the other argument here that Trump is doing a twofold thing here, like if I want to get diabolical. He's trying to make himself the underdog. And then he's also trying to lay groundwork that Biden can really get nothing done
in 4 years. Well, I think he's bitter. You know, Trump is bitter. He feels that the Russians' investigations were designed to undermine his legitimacy. And I think that's part of it, too. And, you know, whatever you think about that, I do think that's part of it. This is an interesting thing I find. Here's one more thing. Trump is also fundraising off this. Now, it might surprise you that a guy who just before the election paid $23 million to settle a fraud case against Trump University might do this, but he's sending out a flyer. And here's one of the things it says. The Democrats want to steal this election. We can't allow the left-wing mob to undermine our election. And then they urge supporters to...
donate money to his defense fund.
That's right. However, there is some other small print in those things that are being sent around. Until Tuesday, some of that money that was being used to sent in was being used to pay down the Trump campaign's debt. So the longer you keep this up, obviously, the more people feel cheated and you want to contribute to their legal fund. Well, and remember that Trump didn't he had a big, you know, taking money, but in the last few weeks of the campaign, he was definitely outspent by Biden. He was running broke. So that helps pay that back. Now, as of Tuesday morning, there's a formula they have on these flyers, but it's changed to funnel most of the money into Trump's new leadership PAC called Save America. So that would set him up to be a kingpin in the Republican Party, have all this money and the Save America that he could distribute to candidates who were friendly toward him and supportive of him. So it seems, as hard as it is to believe, if you know about the history of Donald Trump in business, that he might be, this might be a little bit of a scam that this thing might continue on. But we all agree, we both of us agree, that we don't expect it to be as serious as some people think, although he just replaced the Secretary of Defense and so forth.
Right. I mean, you never know where it's going to go until it goes there. I do. He has continued to amaze me at things that happen. When you think you're at the bottom of the hole gets a little deeper. I'm still really perplexed by the man. I still don't understand it. I still think that he could have been a tremendously popular president. He could have been a real populist if he just come to the center and embraced.
And make deals. I mean, that right. was his thing.
So, but he just could never get out of campaign mode. I do think that he also feels an obligation to his base who wants to see him fight. The strong man will put up a fight. You know, it's almost like a little bit like the South after the Civil War when Lee said it wasn't the cause. The other side simply had more men and material. And so it wasn't the cause that Trump lost. The other side simply had more illegal votes. And so the cause then still is there and can still be fought for. I do think that I don't think this really has much to do with this particular election. I did want to spend a little bit of time just to mention that some of the court cases. There's a lot of them out there. I'm not a lawyer. But the two, I'm just concentrating the ones in Pennsylvania. We already talked about the late arriving ballots. Now we say late arriving; they were postmarked by 8 p.m. the day of the polls were closing. So, but they didn't get delivered until three days after. They're arguing that the state Supreme Court already said 4-3. It went to the U.S. Supreme Court too. Now, I didn't know this, but apparently the states are divided up between the judges. And Pennsylvania got Judge Alito. So Judge Alito said that you count them, but keep them separate.
Right.
So with an indication that the court might want to revisit this. Though if you read the court as a conservative court, they would be very hesitant to jump into a state issue that the state Supreme Court has already decided. But even if they do, right now I think the number stands at 7,800 votes, not near enough they're going to be taking over. The other case was GOP monitoring allowed. Were the GOP allowed to go in and monitor these ballots? Yes, maybe not to the extent that they should have been when we were talking about distances, you know. But then they went to the court, and then they had that overturned. That no, you can be within 6 feet. This is certainly not going to be enough to invalidate hundreds of thousands of votes.
No.
This is going to be something that maybe the legislative branch will have to address the next session to make sure that these things don't happen again. The Hail Mary. There's also a lawsuit coming out. I cannot remember the county when they reported 113,000 votes, and then they updated their numbers, and it was also 127,000 votes. Well, very easily, it was just a numbering glitch that they had to fix. The Republican campaign is saying there's 14,000 magic votes that just showed up for Biden, which, if that is true, obviously they shouldn't be counted and people should go to jail. But it's also going to be very easy to find out because every name is attached to a ballot. That Pennsylvania is a very secure state. So those are the two cases in Pennsylvania that are right now pending. And
they're not going to change a damn thing.
No, and honestly, I tried my hardest to try to find any news site at all that we would consider reputable, right? I'm not going to go to some right-wing blog or left-wing blog to look at something. Trying to find something that somebody was saying, yeah, this is a good move, that this is something that can work. And you just can't find anything anywhere.
No, the election is done.
Right.
And, you know, and like we said, and I agree with you, some of the posturing has to do with the future of people. And, you know, there might even be the future of keeping out of jail.
Right. And that's
keeping prosecutions from happening.
So I think we should leave it there. I think next week we should come back and really talk about where we're going part two, because we're going to have a lot more information through the news where we're going. And then we can start talking about presidential transitions and how presidential transitions work, how they should work, and talk about, I go a little bit more into the idea of peaceful transitions.
Right. And to do that, I think we have to cover a little more about what the Trump voter, because, you know, you and I, we live in a conservative area. Even though Lancaster County had a lot of votes for Joe Biden this time around, we live in a conservative. And we know these people aren't the people who vote for Trump, that many of them are not particularly racist. They're not particularly sexist. And we need to understand that. We need to understand that Joe Biden wants to unify us. Well, you're going to have to understand some of the Trump voters to unify us. Not all of them, because some of them are racist and sexist.
Right, but this idea
and,
that...
as Hillary Clinton said, you know, they're deplorables.
But this idea that there's 70 million Klan members out there running around is ridiculous. I think what the I think part of this is it keeps the Democratic Party from really looking in the mirror and saying, what's the matter with me? Like, yeah. What's the matter with me that you would rather vote for Donald Trump at this point than vote for me? And I think
we need to look at guys like Sherrod Brown in Ohio, who is a proud liberal Democrat, and he keeps getting reelected again and again, right in the heart of it.
So we're going to leave it there. Thanks for coming. See you next time, and we won't be drinking the pumpkin brew.
We won't.